Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and welcome to another time with us. And this is, of course, about love letters and what they mean in people's lives and people's stories that lead to love letters, just so we center around gratitude and love sent to someone, stamped, mailed, and put in the mailbox to make someone else's life richer. And our guest today is smiling so broadly because I know he's gotten a lot of letters that probably made his life richer. So I want to go directly to Gerald Nachman, who was for 14 years the theater and film critic for the Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle, and before that he worked for the New York Daily News as a humor columnist. So Gerald, I'm just going to go to you and tell us about you. I mean, tell us about what took you in this direction. What were you like as a kid?
Well, I wanted to be a cartoonist as a kid, like a lot of kids, and I found out when I took some art classes that I wasn't that good. I was a pretty good caricature, so I could still do that. But I realized when I had to make a college choice, I was kind of thinking of going to art school or going to a real college, and I went to junior college to kind of tread water till I made up my mind in Oakland City College. Mm-hmm. And then I went to transfer to San Jose State as an advertising major because I figured I could draw a little bit and I could write a little bit. I'd written for the high school paper and the junior college paper. And I thought, well, I'd go into advertising. I had a good advertising and journalism school. But then after a year, I really started looking enviously over at the journalism majors.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to switch majors, so I became a journalism major.
Oh, so you did.
And I started writing for the College Humor magazine. I got accepted. That was a major break in my career.
So and then after college you went to, what happened next? I mean,
after that, well, I got hired, right? I was in my senior year at San Jose State, and I got hired by the San Jose Mercury to write a TV column.
Oh.
I thought I would have to cover fires and, you know, go to police
axe murders,
exactly, all kinds of, you know, zoning board meetings, all that boring stuff. I hated reporting.
Yeah.
I liked feature writing, and they hired me, and I wrote a TV column for my last half semester, and then they hired me full time to write a TV column and a humor column. They kind of alternated.
How nice, dream come true.
It was, and it was amazing. A huge break, another big break.
So,
I've had about three in my life, and
nice.
That was a major one.
So when did you go to New York, and what happened? I mean, leaving San Jose for New York is a big rip.
Yeah,
isn't it?
My family thought I was crazy. They thought this is a great secure job, and it was a great secure job for a kid. I was 24,
mm-hmm.
But I always had this New York thing in my head.
Had you ever been to New York?
I think I had been there once. I'd been there with my dad on a trip when I was 15,
mm-hmm.
and I'd gone back to see shows and a friend who'd moved to New York, and I just got it in my head. I had to do the New York thing, and I grew up kind of revering, you know, the famous Algonquin Round Table,
sure.
and that whole thing. And when you're a writer, that's very important. So I quit my job after 3 years in San Jose and just went cold to New York. You had no place to stay, no place to work. I stayed with a friend for a few weeks until
You knew somebody there, right?
Okay. I knew a friend there. I stayed with him until I found my own place. Mm-hmm.
And so what happened from there? How did you go about looking for work? And
well, I got a summer
tryout. How much did they want you?
Well, they didn't want me too much the first time. I got a summer tryout at the I always say the old New York Post, because that was the liberal post. It's post in the new conservative New York Post. I got a summer tryout, but I was not very good. I was thrown out on the streets as a reporter, which, as I said earlier, I was terrible. I'm not a very good news reporter.
So that's interesting. What makes a person not a good news reporter?
Well, you have to be interested in it. And I was just not interested in covering fires and riots and all that kind of stuff. And I hate deadlines. You know, I'm the last person in the world to be working for a newspaper because I like a lot of luxury. I like a lot of time. And I hate being on deadline. I hate that pressure. Some people work best under that. I work worse.
Oh, so you're saying like fires is a different kind of pressure because it's obviously last minute.
You have
to
go right out
there
and get back. And you have 45 minutes or an hour to write it. And it's got to be good. And
because you still have a deadline with a column.
Well,
but
yeah, but you can write ahead.
Amortize it over a week.
You can write ahead.
Yes, yes.
That's
right.
The beauty part of that.
Sure.
And so I was a kind of a disaster. I did a few feature stories, but they didn't keep me because I was just a summer intern.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long story. But then I went back a year later. They gave me another shot, and I did make it because they put me on the Sunday weekend magazine where I was doing a lot of profiles of entertainment for people, which was something I'd done in San Jose, you know, writing the TV column. I'd done a lot of interviews. I was pretty good at interviewing.
Jerry, can I ask you, what decade was this?
1920, no. it sounds like that. I graduated in 1960, so this would have been all In the 60s, all okay. taking place in the 60s. College and then San Jose. And then I left for New York in 1963.
And there was a whole new world of different kind of music all of a sudden and different kind of...
Oh, you're telling me, yeah.
So will you tell me?
Well, my kind of music, which is basically show tunes and Tin Pan Alley stuff, was kind of being buried by rock, of course, and by folk music, too.
Oh, that's right, the folk music episode.
Folk music was tolerable. Rock music I didn't get. I still don't get it.
Really?
Okay. Not all of it, but I'm kind of... I didn't understand Elvis Presley and doo-wop and all that.
Oh, I didn't understand Elvis Presley until I was an adult.
Oh, really?
Yes, the man is exquisite.
Oh, what, you mean to look at or?
To listen to in his. Anyway, this isn't about me.
Well,
Elvis Presley,
he seems kind of harmless and inoffensive now when I look at him.
Oh, that aspect yes.
At the time, he seemed like a major rebel, mm-hmm. and I just didn't like. I was real square, I guess, and I liked. Singers like, Margaret Whiting and Frank Sinatra and, Tony Bennett. And
but what did this call on you to do in your writing since there was this whole new world of...
Well, I didn't write that much about music per se. I didn't cover music per se. Mm-hmm. So I just had it, I just watched it from afar.
So it didn't affect what you...
Heard it from afar, yeah.
And so, after that...
And
by the way, what was your personal life like during this? I mean...
Well, I met my wife in New York when I was working at the New York Post, and we got married in 1966 through a friend who was going with her. They broke up. I met her, and,
You got her.
Things clicked, yeah.
Nice. So, and your parents, meanwhile, were saying, gee, we sure pegged you wrong?
Well, my dad, unfortunately, had died by then. He died pretty young, and he couldn't... He saw my success in San Jose, and then he passed away, and then my mother lived to see all this, so that's always heartening. And,
yeah. So what were some... Now, you said you did a humor column in New York.
Well, it was a kind of a topical humor column, kind of like, it wasn't political like Buchwald per se, it was mm-hmm. like Russell Baker, and it was whatever I wanted it to be.
So you could choose your own.
Yeah, I got a lot of attention. I got written up by Time and Newsweek, because it was
nice.
a new thing for the New York Daily News, which had always been a tabloid, kind of a, axe murderers and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and they didn't have much of a humorous side, but the editor there took a chance.
Of course, now they've got movies called So I Married an Axe Murderer, Life Has Changed.
Right.
Yes.
So he took a chance at me, another great break, and I was able to, make good on it happily.
And then what brought you back to San Francisco?
Actually, my wife and I decided we wanted to come back here, and we'd had enough in New York, really. I realized in New York what a California guy I was, really.
How did you see that? What showed you?
Well, it's just a frantic... It's exciting, but it's frantic, and the day-to-day life is very wearying after a while. Everything... Taking your clothes to the laundry becomes a major adventure and sometimes hassle, And you have to... the climate... I hate extremes of weather. I love this. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a little too much fog right now, but... And the hecticness of the life, which I like going back. I always say I love New York. I always say New York is great as long as you know you're going to leave.
Yeah, it is exciting to be there.
Yeah,
it is. That energy for...
But I really have to live here. It's easy here, and it's, but it's a little boring sometimes. I lived in New York. I went back another time, so I lived there all told 10 years.
Now, so what made you come back to San... Did you have this job in San Francisco, or you came back cold again?
I can't remember so long ago. I had a job at the Chronicle and in the city room again as a reporter, which I kind of dreaded. But we wanted to come back and start life, my wife and I, in mm-hmm. San Francisco. And the Chronicle, I'd grown up reading it, and it was then a great paper, I thought, And I wanted to work for it in any case, and it was a way to get back to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and then...
And so you applied for a job there?
Yeah,
or was
I applied
that
for a job,
did?
And they took me on in 66. And then I heard while I was working in the city room, I wasn't liking it too much, that both theater critics at the Oakland Tribune had quit. So I raced over there and got that job, and then I was at the Oakland Tribune for 4.5 years as a theater and film critic. And then I left that and went back to New York again.
Oh, so it wasn't a straight shot.
No, I went back back and forth twice. I went back again and worked at the New York Daily News. Again, I didn't have a job, but I wanted to get back, give it another shot, because I still had
the
New
York...
That's
such a brave thing to do, to keep going someplace where you don't have a job. I'm finding that really impressive.
Well, as I look back now, it seems kind of naive and maybe a little bit foolish, but...
Yeah.
you know, New York is certainly scary, but it was not. It was scary in a way, in the fact that I was kind of a kid out of my depth. But on the other hand, it was exciting, and I knew a few people, and that helps a lot, you know.
So, what does it require to be a really good film critic, as you were? What do you look for?
I always say to people who would confront me and say, "What gives you the right to be a film critic?" That's a less nice way than you just put it. fortunately, I'm always right, and I have perfect taste.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, that's all it takes. No, you need a passion, not to be flip, but you need a passion for it. And I see it as a form of writing. I'm not a film critic per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to write, and it's something to write about. It's a topic. Mostly I was a theater critic. I did a lot of film, but theater is my first love. My dad was an actor.
Oh, really?
He was a community theater actor in East Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, you know, hearing him do. They would congregate in our living room and rehearse, and I would run lines with my dad and all that. I grew up kind of absorbing the theater culture.
Are you harsh as a critic? Would you say, or are you? How do you go about this?
People said I was, but you know, I guess maybe I was harsher than some, and I don't know. I think living in New York made me a little tougher.
What kinds of things would get you to be harsh on a play? Or a movie?
Well,
what kind
just
of things?
Didn't measure up to what it was trying to be, that's all. And, you know, everybody's a critic in a way. And everybody walks out and they say, I love that or that stinks.
Right.
But then you have to back it up. That's the hard part. And that's what critics have to do.
And also some of the critics. I mean, you know, I read Anthony Lane.
Oh, yeah,
and I remember
very good.
Reading what he says is so often better than the movie.
Absolutely.
You know, that's like a good book review. Or Pauline Kael used to be just wonderful.
Right. That's a very good point.
And
I always say a critic has to be entertaining as the thing they're reviewing. Mm-hmm. You have to hold the reader's interest. That's the first. And you have to be interesting and provocative, even if it's negative provocative.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have something that readers can sink their teeth into.
Yes. So you like that. I wish this were television so you could see his smile.
So when
did you start writing the books?
Oh, the book started...
in New York?
Well, I wrote it. Well, my first book was called Playing House. It was about marriage.
And when was that?
It was a humor book. That was in 1958, I think. No, wait a minute. Couldn't have been then. I wasn't married yet. 68, I think. 68. And it was...
That's the soul of a critic speaking. Like, you could still write about it not having been one.
No, I was married 14 years.
Okay.
13 years. And so I wrote about it, my own marriage and other marriages. It got published, and then I got a second book, which was a collection of pieces from the New York... from the New York Daily News and the Chronicle. And
your own pieces.
Writing. Yeah, it's called Out on a Whim.
Mm-hmm.
Both available on Amazon.
I was just going to ask you that.
Everything
is
available on Amazon.
Yes.
and then I wrote those were fun, but then I wrote a singles column for the Chronicle called The Single Life for a year and a half, and that was collected into a book called The Fragile Bachelor. And that was published, and so that's a collection.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, we so often... think about, well, maybe because I'm female, I don't know about how you see it, Teresa, but the girl's point of view,
mm-hmm.
you know, what she needs and
and
how fragile she is in this world of dating.
Well, that's why I call it the fragile bachelor, because men are always the thought of as the insensitive brutes, and
that's right.
women
so,
are the fragile,
exactly.
delicate flowers. Yeah,
so talk to us about the fragile bachelor.
Well, it was just a good title, actually. It was a calm night.
Well, as a man, though, you must have something to say about that. I mean,
it wasn't just about dating and, you know, romance and you know, that part of it. It was, you know, a certain part about that, unavoidably and interestingly. But I wrote about living alone. I wrote about how to, you know, just thumbing through it last night about trying to get through Sunday afternoons alone. You know, that's kind of a real downtime.
Was that hard
for you? In all people's lives. You know, how do you get from 3 o'clock to 60 minutes? You know,
that's
what I said.
So I Sunday Night Blues. I think that's
shopping for one and going out and eating. How it is to eat in one? They try to shunt you off to the counter. You know, and women don't like to eat alone because they feel you know scorned in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why don't you have a man?
Right.
As this never happens to men, but even men don't like to eat out alone. Some of them. And I love it. I still do.
Oh, good for
I'm
you.
Still
okay.
Single.
Yes. So what else? I mean, in the world of dating, I'm always so interested. And I think the world is interested in this because the world of dating is so daunting for so many reasons.
And a lot of people didn't like my column. And I always said the people liked or disliked the column depending on how happy they were being single.
You portrayed it as a positive?
Well, I portrayed, I don't know. I made fun of some of it, so people resented that. People who were miserable and wanted to get married and find somebody. I was never miserable, but I was always looking, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I found it, again, as a writing subject, a great topic to, and a lot of it is a great topic to have fun with. Mm-hmm. So that was why it was appealing to me. And nobody ever written about singles then. And this was in the middle 80s when, fern bars and all that stuff were really happening. It was a great subject.
And I think people don't generally take into account the trials of men, single men.
Yeah, well, they're the same as women.
We assume if a man is single, it's 100% because he wants to be.
Often.
And probably not necessarily true.
A lot of guys are looking arduously as women and being rejected and going through all that angst and stuff. And
right.
It gave me a great shield, my notebook, to go into places I never would have gone. Like, I never went to singles bars. A, I don't drink, and B, I think they're incredibly boring. You have to spend 5 hours before you meet anybody, and I'm too impatient for that. So I did wade into a couple of singles bars. And
clipboard just, in hand, you're safe.
Well,
in
pocket, let's say. Uh-huh. Notebook in pocket. And I would scribble on cocktail napkins and stuff, because I didn't want people to know I was writing.
Oh, you weren't interviewing people. You were just observing.
No. And I signed up with a dating agency, which I never would have done. And I went out with somebody, and then I wrote about it. That was kind of unfortunate, because I didn't use her name or any identifying details, but still.
Everybody knew.
She was not happy, and somebody said she knew who it was. So that I learned a lesson on that.
Yeah. So tell us about the book you're working on now, and would you like to tell us a website we could go to?
I'm having one made up right now. It's not quite yet there, but if you look up my name on Google, you'll find everything about my books.
Okay, so you can just Google
Gerald Nachman.
G-E-R-A-L-D.
Yeah, N-A-C-H-M-A-N.
N-A-C-H-M-A-N.
But just go on Amazon. And Google, not Amazon. Go on Google.
Google to find you, but people can go on Amazon and
find
get your books.
Books.
You can
books.
Enter your name and get your books.
Exactly.
Tell us the book that is your newest one now.
Well, the newest one is about the Ed Sullivan Show, which came out last November, and it's coming out in paperback this fall. It's called Right Here on Our Stage Tonight, Ed Sullivan's America. And it's all about the saga.
History?
The show ran 23 years, the longest-running variety show and almost longest-running show of any kind, TV history. And he turned out to be an interesting guy. I was interested in him because he'd been a Broadway columnist, and he had a New York life, and he was a sports writer.
Did you know him? I mean, had you?
No, I didn't know him. He died. Actually, our columns ran side by side for about a year when he was in his last year or two. He died a year after I joined the.
Question to ask, and I don't mean to sound catty in any way at all. Of course,
those are always the best questions.
What you say? He was an interesting man. I want to know what was interesting about him. He seemed to be the squarest, dullest human being ever to grace this earth. Although you can't be and have a TV show like that. But.
Well, people don't realize that he was the co-creator and co-producer of that show. He was just not the clunky guy that got out on camera and screwed up the introduction, which he's famous for, and he was pretty bad at that.
But what did we hear the other day that he introduced Carol Channing as Carol Hanning?
There were a lot of Ed Sullivan stories the other day at that event. But,
yeah.
I took some of those with a grain of salt because I know the real stories.
And you will too, listeners, if you buy this book.
Yes.
I'm going to get it.
Well, I've got all of his gaffes in there. Like he introduced a singer as now starving on Broadway, and he really had some doozies. But he was interesting because of his background. As I say, a lot of people didn't realize he'd been a sports writer and a Broadway columnist. He was a character in New York. He was known in New York, but it's really about the show mostly, and it's also about his life.
Okay.
But mainly it's about the show. I talked to about 60 performers, and
Okay, well, let's say the title one more time.
Right Here on Our Stage
Right
Tonight.
Here
if you think of him saying it,
yes,
Right
of course.
Here on Our Stage Tonight.
Yes, okay. Now talk to us about letters, because we are about letters, and I always like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, I'm a letters freak, so this is a great show to be
good.
On. And I
instead of asking you who's going to get your letter today, let's just talk about letters that you've received and what they've meant to you.
Well, yes, I've always kept all my letters. I've always kept all my letters.
How many do you have?
Oh, I don't know, hundreds, maybe thousands more. I don't know. Not just love letters, but letters from readers. I threw out a lot of those. After been a long time.
A good fan letter is a love letter.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, in a way, yes, that's right. And
that's
I got a lot of letters from performers over the years, and they were mostly all complimentary if I give them a rave, of course. I got a few. I got one famous one that I framed that I can't even repeat on the radio, but from Anthony Newley, who was very profane, and it's a great letter, though. Everybody loves reading the letter. And but most of them are nice. I've got them in my scrapbooks, and I hope to publish them, some of them, if I can, you know, if I can do that. And in the next book I'm doing, which is a memoir, which is based a lot on letters I've had, and I'm going to go back and read a lot.
I think collections of letters are fascinating to people all the time. I can't think of a book that doesn't hit something big, because there was that, and we've talked about this before, just to take a second, and I don't know if you remember this, but Jackie Robinson's letters with that little kid whose name I forget. He was a 13-year-old boy, and he wrote a fan letter to Jackie Robinson, and Jackie Robinson answered it, and then he wrote back, and they had a lifetime communication with letters. And recently these letters came to life, and the headlines was in Jackie Robinson's own handwriting. It's always in the person's own handwriting, because there's magic in the handwriting.
Right, there is.
So if you do this...
I gather
these are all handwritten. Handwritten letters that you've gotten, some typed, I guess.
Yeah, but this is in the age before emails and videos.
Thank God.
And I say letters are these wonderful little 8.5 by 11 frames of our life at certain moments in time.
Yes, your history.
Yeah,
chunk by chunk.
Nothing like it. Nothing like it.
That's right.
And it also, because I'm trying to remember everything from my memoir, and you don't remember everything, nearly everything. You remember a small fraction of it, but you go back and there are such details in the letters. Trigger all kinds of memories and ideas.
Breathe that in, because we talk a lot about the great letters are filled with specifics.
Yeah.
You're so special doesn't mean anything.
No.
But I'm so glad you talk about the detail.
Yeah. Rich detail. Mm-hmm. You know, what you did yesterday and what you're going to do and your ideals and your hopes and your dreams and also just the nuts and bolts of your life, really.
So what means most to you in a letter when you get a fan letter? What kind of things really touch you?
Well, I still get fan letters of a kind, because I still run it. It's been like 17 years since I left the Chronicle.
You're going to get one from me next week, but
Okay.
Beside the point.
Oh, good.
Yes,
okay.
Go ahead. So what means?
I run into people now and then that remember actual lines from my columns.
Yes.
You know? I was standing in line at something at the Jewish Film Festival, actually, and some guy came who was one of the volunteers. He said, I know who you are, and blah, blah. And he quoted a line of mine.
Yes. Now, isn't that the gift? Because we say, when we talk to people and assist people and train people in how to write a good love letter, we say, because I know this for sure, that the gift is that you remembered.
Yeah. Yeah.
A good love letter is really a gift of having remembered. People were paying attention.
Sometimes it can be painful to go back and read some of those, I've found. So,
sure.
You know, things that you know, dead ends and, you know, hurt feelings and all kinds of stuff. But it tells you a lot about who you were.
Well, it tells you also that you were the kind of person who could command some attention and people took seriously.
Right.
I think.
Right. And I've got letters of the ones that I wrote, because not love letters, but letters, you know, carbons. Remember carbons?
Yes, I sure do.
I kept carbons because I was a newspaper guy. We made carbons of everything, so I made carbons of my letters.
That's excellent, because we tell people now, you know, you live in a wonderful time, make copies of the letters you send, because you may want to look back someday and see what you wrote or see how you felt at a particular time.
Or print it out if it's an email. But do people send love letters on email? You've probably confronted this on
I'm so glad you asked that. Yes, they do, and they think it's a love letter. Now, I consider it really a love spurt and worth a lot. I love email.
Yeah.
But, and it's, I mean, it's still a heart thump when you get something wonderful. But it's not the same as a love letter. It's not a gift like a love letter is.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you need something in your dismal pile of mail that shines.
Right.
And that says,
you
here
always
I...
get exciting if you see that little kind of, it looks different than, than a business letter or a bill.
Yes, exactly. And so there's that. And also with an email, like Teresa was talking about it yesterday, we were someplace, and you have to do all the work. You know, we point out that you have to do the work. You have to download it, and you have to print it out, and you have to make sure there's ink in the printer, and you have to... And you have. And once you've done that, you've got something kind of... Where's the proof that a human being was there? Where's
right,
the signature?
Right.
There's no touch of that person's
not
hand.
Not the, the envelope is a major part of it.
Yes,
of course.
It is.
The stamp and the... You know, return address. Yeah.
I got a love letter. I got a love letter yesterday from my cousin. We've known each other all our lives, and before I even read anything, I knew it was her handwriting.
Yes,
I recognized it. I knew exactly who it was from before I even read the.
And I have on occasion taken it and taken a big sniff to see if there's a scent in it.
Oh, I never did that, but.
But sometimes you can even can even feel somebody's perfume after they've. Yeah. It's a whole different thing. So email's great, but a love letter is something special.
Handwriting must have. I always had terrible handwriting, but handwriting must have really have degenerated over the years.
I heard recently from about three different people that they are not teaching cursive writing in the schools anymore.
Great.
I get a case of hives every time I say it out loud because handwriting is such a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But one woman who came and did a show with us said she told her six-year-old that she would teach him handwriting. And the reason she got him to accept this is she said to him, if you learn this, you will be able to understand, you will be able to read the secret thoughts of grown-ups.
That's a good way to
put it. And he was on board.
That's great. That's a great teaching device. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So this is wonderful to hear all that you're saying about letters.
Yeah,
I hope you do put them.
I don't
in a
write
book.
Them. I don't write them anymore myself. You know, it's terrible.
So do you ever, if you were to write one? I know we just have about 1 minute.
Okay.
If you were to write one right now, sometimes it's fun just to choose a person. You can just
shock them.
Shock them with delight.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Just I've been thinking about you, and I know I don't write letters as a rule anymore, but I wanted you to know that I remember the time you fill in the blank.
Yeah. Yeah.
You will make somebody so happy. Who would you write to if you had to right now?
Gee, you. I don't know.
Why not?
I don't know. You know, my close friends that don't realize how much they mean to me, things
yes,
like that.
You know,
as you get older, that becomes important.
Yes, it does.
That people know.
Yes.
You know?
I actually got a letter from someone 50 years later for something that had happened that I didn't remember about. And it was quite, I almost swallowed my tongue.
Well, for this memoir, I'm also interviewing friends from different parts of my life because I know they'll remember things that I don't remember.
Wonderful.
I'm going to report on it like it's another person.
Good. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing that book and to getting your others.
I hope so.
So I'll go to Amazon. Thank you so much for doing
this
with
us. It's been great fun.
The name of the new book is?
Right Here on Our Stage.
Right
tonight,
Here on Our
Ed
Stage.
Ed Sullivan's America.
Yes, yeah. I'm going to enjoy that. I used
Me
to
too.
Watch that show with my parents and loved
yeah,
it.
Everybody did. You
yeah.
just grew up watching it.
Right.
So this is a new book, but it's out already, you're saying?
Oh, it came out in November.
That's
the
what
paperback
I thought you
is
said.
Coming out in,
yes.
In this
okay.
November.
Okay. So Amazon, here we come.
$10 cheaper, or you can get it on Amazon.
Perfect. Okay.
Well, Jerry,
thank you, dear.
Thank you
so much for joining us, and thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you'll join us every week at this time. And in the meantime, we always encourage you to put your loving thoughts and sentiments into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes, and if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion. Pick an old friend, write what you remember, stamp it, mail it, and shock someone into delight.
Sounds good. So, till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.